Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
This is Money Talking from WNYC. I'm Charlie Herman. Have you ever talked to somebody who has a really cool job and walked away thinking, wow, I didn't even know that job existed? Well, I have, and it happened to me recently.
I spend my time thinking about the intersections of culture and people. There are lots of ways you can think about me, but the most powerful one is to think about me as someone whose job sits at the intersection of technology and culture.
This is Genevieve Bell, and she's the Director of User Experience at Intel. And this is a speech she gave at the New York City Media Lab's annual meeting about our centuries-old relationship with robots. More on that in a little bit. But first, here's how she describes what she does.
My job is to bring the stories from outside the building into the building and use them to shape the way we think about next-generation technologies, products, and services. But my second job is also to tell stories about the future. I think one of the things that anyone who is in the business of making technology is doing is actually making a promise to the future. We are telling stories about what the future might be, what it could be, what we wish it to be.
She is an anthropologist by training, and while that may sound kind of intriguing, an anthropologist at Intel, it's actually not that unique anymore. A lot of big companies are hiring people trained in the social sciences to help them understand how we, the consumers, interact with their products and services. These companies are realizing that an MBA with a spreadsheet and a ton of data may only take them so far. Social scientists are trained in observation with the ability to hone in on what makes people tick. So humanities majors of the world, unite, have hope. There is work for us. But in the end, is the work that Bell does just to find out what we like and don't like and then make a product to sell us?
So sometimes we're actually doing more exploratory work than that. I mean, you know, we make microprocessors. But in order to make the right sort of decisions about what those microprocessors will do, you need to be thinking about what are the objects they will power, what are the experiences they will deliver. And so part of my team's job is to help drive that thinking, right, the early exploration about what might technology do next. It's not always about building a specific product. Sometimes it's about what do we think human beings are going to want to do in 2020?
Are you creating things that people want? Or are you creating products that people will crave that they didn't even know that they want?
I always think that's an interesting design question, right? There are sort of twin impulses. One of them is very much, I think, about can you find pain points and fix them? So are there things that frustrate us tremendously that we could surely do a better job of? That, you know, we'll run the gamut from how many passwords does the average human being have and can we have less of them to do you have a lot of wires? We should be able to get to less of those. So sort of the pain point principle on one side. And I think the other side says is, you know, are there things that as human beings we value and care about and technology could let us do those things in a different way? Maybe a better way, maybe just a different way. And, you know, somewhere in between those two things, I think most successful technologies sit.
Can you give me an example of, you know, a particular product, service, idea, solution that your team and you came up with?
I'm not even sure that's the right way to think about it. I mean, I suspect, you know, part of the reason to have had research social scientists at Intel wasn't about a particular product on a shelf, right? It was about how do we transform the way we think about the business of making technology so it's not driven by the technology per se, but it also includes thinking about what is the market going to bear, what is it that human beings want. But part of it is about, you know, how do you drive different kinds of conversations.
What are you curious about? What gets your curiosity going?
I was reflecting on it the other day. My house is full of books, and physical books still. Every room in my house there is a pile of books that I'm halfway through reading. And I think what keeps me curious, what keeps me in the world is I just want to know. I want to know everything. Do I think I'll ever accomplish that? No. But there's something sort of delightful about getting to think about what makes us tick and what has made us tick, what will make us tick.
Why do you think technology can make people feel so anxious sometimes?
I think technology's always been tied up with our hopes and our fears, right? You know, I think from the earliest technologies, steam, electricity, radio, there were kind of anxieties about what will this mean? Will it change us? Will it make us different? And I think, you know, we worried and we hoped. And I think those things are always emotionally charged.
How do companies succeed over the long term versus being kind of the flash in the pan? What are the ingredients that make them successful?
Yeah. I mean, it's a good question, right? I think one of the challenges for big companies, in fact, for most companies, and it's Intel's challenge too, is how do you keep refreshing your imagination so that you find and pay attention to the things that don't look like the future you imagine, right? So how do you maintain curiosity at a company level? And how do you not get trapped by your own past to miss things? And I think that's hard, right? You know, we've certainly had our misses at Intel. And I think, you know, we find ourselves in the process now of thinking about how do we pay attention to the Internet of Things, to wearable computing, to mobile devices, and really starting to imagine that we're not a computing we're a computer company, we're a computing company. And starting to say, listen, if it's smart and connected, it should be, you know, running on us, is a very different way of thinking about what we do. And I think, you know, part of the thing that is hard to do is to keep constantly reinventing yourselves, right? And, you know, that's hard work.
How do you do that? I mean, how do you foster creativity in a company, whether it's a couple people or whether it's a many thousands of people? Is there a secret sauce to do that?
That's a good question. I think one of the things about fostering creativity is you've got to know where you want to have it. So I think it's never a matter of just saying, go be creative. Part of it's about, you know, what are the problems you need to solve? How do you make sure you're paying attention to the things you don't know how to anticipate, which in some ways is a very hard thing? And how do you make sure you have a culture that's not necessarily about fostering creativity, but it's about fostering hard questions? So, you know, how do you make sure that you have people that will ask, why aren't we doing this? Have you seen this thing? Why are we doing that thing? And it's not just about how do you let people play, but it's also about how do you create a culture of rigor that makes hard questions okay.
Is there a hard question you're asking yourself right now?
I think, you know, one of the questions I'm asking myself is how much technology is going to be enough? You know, how much stuff do people want in their lives? And conversely, where is our willingness to share information? What will be the nature of privacy? What does it mean to think about security? Those, I mean, I think are going to be the fascinating questions over the next 10 years. So me, I worry about those things, but I also get to sort of contemplate them too.
How did you end up at Intel?
I ended up at Intel in the classic way that an Australian would end up anywhere. I met a man in a bar in Palo Alto in 1998, and he changed my life. And also because there was this opportunity, right? I mean, when Intel came along, the opportunity to be in the middle of a conversation about the most important technologies that were going to happen in the 21st century, that was an opportunity that was really hard to turn down. To go be in the middle of that conversation to help shape it, that was extraordinarily seductive.
How important do you think curiosity is? And can you create that in other people?
Yes, I think you can, but I think it's also a commitment, right? It requires being able to ask the next set of questions. It requires being willing to be surprised. And I think, you know, sometimes the hardest thing about being curious is it means you have to acknowledge you don't know something. And I think as we get older, as we get established in our professions, even as we are establishing ourselves in our professions, it's really hard to ask questions like why, because you're afraid you might look foolish. And I think there's something really powerful in one's willingness to still be able to look foolish or to be able to be surprised. Because every time you were surprised, that means you've encountered something that you didn't know, a way the world worked that you didn't realize. And if you allow yourself to have those moments, right, where you can still be surprised, where you are still willing to ask the question and expose the fact that you don't know or that you don't quite know, I think that's how you stay curious.
And Genevieve Bell's job is to be curious, to have different kinds of conversations. How great is that? When I caught up with her at the NYC Media Lab, she was talking about the history and the future of robots.
What is the robot for? Is it as a substitute human being? Is it just to do drudgery? Is it about companionship? Is it about substituting humanity? And this question here about form and function, they constantly work together, right? What's it doing and what does it look like become this set of questions that are the constant pair.
We've got a link to Bell's entire talk on our website, moneytalking.org. It's worth a listen, if only to learn the origins of the word robot. Here are some clues. Eastern Europe, Broadway, Marxism, and Spencer Tracy. I'm Charlie Herman, and this is Money Talking from WNYC.